Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am thrilled to invite you to Rachel Uncensored, my podcast where I get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. From personal stories to hot button issues, we cover it all. New episodes drop every Wednesday, so make sure you tune in on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.
Hello and welcome to the IGN UK podcast. I'm joined this week by Rory Powers.
What's up, guys?
What's up, Rory?
I thought that was pretty good entrance. Yeah, not a lot. Been very busy this week because we have a couple editors out of the office, which makes me work.
Doing a bit of a loot, just whinging on your intro.
Yeah, well, I've got events somewhere.
Nobody's heard about my holiday.
No one heard? No. But it's been good. It's been very, very fun. We have a lot of cool stories, which we will get into a little
later. You basically say people have screwed you over.
Yes, everyone.
Big time.
I have like a multi-computer. I have like this spinny chair, and I just want all the computers around me so I can spin to desks.
I can tell you're a professional. You have a multi-computer and a spinny chair.
Spinny chair, exactly. That's how we do things.
Jesus Christ. That's how you do things that are
The voice
office.
Of reason to my right is Daniel Krupa.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
Been traveling the world or parts of Eastern Europe.
And Brighton.
And Brighton. We can talk about one. We can talk about the Brighton trip later, not the other one. We'll save that for a later date because it's top secret. But that's due with the IGN first.
Yeah.
That's coming up sometime in the near future.
Yeah. But first, Battlefield Hardline is out this week. And I don't know, you wait 2 years for a heist game, then two come along at once, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I've been playing it. We played a while ago,
probably
about 6 months ago now,
yeah.
And we were quite lukewarm on the single player.
Yeah.
Now, I've played it a bit more now. It's okay. It's like we gave it an 8
on
site.
You're not feeling it. So, bit of detail, it's made by Visceral, people behind the Dead Space franchise, and that's the episodic kind of TV cop drama episodic campaign mode, right?
Yeah. And my problem with it is, it's just a bit... it's exactly as I expected. Like, you know, they're based in Miami. The cop's called Mendoza. He gets framed. And it's kind of, do you know what I mean? It's like so cliche.
Okay, next question. So I've played a little bit. I think you've played a bit more than me.
Yeah.
Is it knowingly so? Like, that, I feel like that's a distinction.
I feel like they really did embrace
it. If something falls into the traps of like cliche and tropes because it just doesn't know what else to do, or is it kind of playing upon, do you reckon?
Okay, well, at the point where I'm at now, that's not apparent.
Right, okay.
And that may become apparent later on.
Yeah.
But so far, it is like some kind of crappy cop drama you would see on Channel 5.
It was really strange because
Channel
5.
That's how bad it is.
I was playing a little bit of it earlier, and you know, when it kind of starts off, you're like introduced to the characters, and they're kind of like posing. It'll have shots of them talking. It'll freeze, and their names will come up. And I was like, "Wow, this is really like a weird cop show that you like watch on TV." And then as soon as I stopped playing and went back to the main menu, in that little interval, they were like, "Next time on Battlefield," and they have like a trailer, like a little teaser for what you're going to be doing next in the game.
See, I kind of like that approach.
Oh, I like it. I thought it was really cool, but it was the first time I've ever seen it, and it was
one of my
really
favorite
kind of...
moments from a last gen game, if that's what we're saying now. Was the end of the first bit of Alan Wake when you run towards the house and is it Roy Orbison's In Dream starts playing, And it's just like the end of the show, and it feels like a real cliffhanger, and like, that's brilliant. It doesn't do that throughout the game as well, but that first episode where it kind of imitates TV.
Yeah.
Not that games have to imitate TV, but that's definitely just, that's a thing they're going for.
That's
fine.
Trying to do on this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, they're trying to be like TV. I think it's just a thing they're tapping into. Cop shows are huge on TV.
Yeah.
Same as mystery dramas with Alan Wake tapping into Twin Peaks. Yeah, but I'm not really like, that stuff hasn't registered as much with me. Right. Like, I'm just kind of just going around flashing my badge, which is a new mechanic.
Yeah, and that works quite well. It took me probably a couple of missions to get used to that. Yeah. And kind of trying to play it out as stealthily as possible.
Because you get more XP play good cop.
And
so if you go around arresting people rather than just shooting them in the back.
And this was something that I wasn't anticipating either, is that obviously we've been playing a lot of GTA heists. And that's kind of like you breaking into places, stealing things. Mm. And this one in the story mode, you're playing a cop, a police officer. And I was like, oh, let's see how this differs.
To begin with.
I feel like a badass.
Right.
I busted up this drug gang and I was shooting people in the face. I felt really cool.
Wow.
It was great.
Maybe you should be a
police
officer.
And then I play Battlefield. Yeah.
Right. I don't think you should be... I don't think you pass the psychological evaluation. No. So how will you tackle this situation? I shoot him in the face.
In the face. Yeah. She didn't give me any time.
You don't ask questions. You
she
don't flash
jumped
the badge.
Out of the bathroom with a shotgun, and I just had a second to react.
Oh, yeah, she went down.
Bam,
like,
bam, 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 bam.
Yeah, it was she pulling a shotgun on you.
Exactly.
Well, let's ask questions later.
Exactly. And it was cool, because you just assume, like, if you're playing... if you're like the bandit, the robber, that's like a cool role. And then, you know, the police are just kind of enforcing the law. But it felt really cool. I thought it was awesome.
When are they going to make a great, why not the bill?
The bill?
Why not
the
bill?
Was that not the getaway?
Well, I just want to, kind of more kind of procedural, tedious British based cop game where you're basically just watching people nick stuff.
We have
Iceland.
A piece of feedback about that.
Oh, okay.
Later on. So we'll address that later.
But
what I found weird about Hardline is that we have been playing quite a lot of GTA, and to go from that complete freedom to being funneled through in a certain direction is quite jarring.
Yeah.
I found it quite weird to begin with. Even the bits where you get in a car and you've got to drive off and you have a level of control, but really the only way you can drive is that way.
Yeah, it was funny. I was doing a driving mission, and although, as you say, you do have a bit of freedom, it did kind of feel like you were on a track, and you can only swerve so much and change the path.
The driving's
so
really simplified, but I was thinking, it always kind of has been in Battlefield.
Well, because hands up, I haven't played the multiplayer yet. You guys have been playing a little bit of the multiplayer. Yeah. How does that compare to Heist, for example?
Let's talk about... So there is a mode in the multiplayer called Heists, which is a big open map, as you'd expect from a Battlefield game. And there's two teams. There's the robbers, there's the cops. You start at opposite sides of the map. And in the scenario I played, it was in the Everglades, and there's kind of this little petrol station, gas station, if you're American.
Oh.
And the robbers had to get there to steal the bags, the money. We had to get there first to stop them. If they get their bags, they have to deposit them in certain areas and helicopters come to pick them up. So it's basically like capture stuff. It's a variation on that. And it is fun, like starting out on one side of the map and everyone like piling into cop cars or jumping on the back of a motorbike that some other dude's driving and you're like riding up, music blaring into battle. That's kind of cool.
But a very different take.
It's more kind of what you expect from an online multiplayer shooter, where it's like frantic.
There is essentially like a level of narrative to each different map. So I mean, there's ones where you're robbing a bank, and there's ones where you're collecting bags of guns.
Yeah, the one was like a drug bust. Like you have to like collect the money and stuff.
Yeah, but essentially, it is no more than just get the loot and escape with the loot. And I mean, it is cool. Even as I said, getting to play from both sides of that and the challenges, you know, that you face and the different tactics that are approached from trying to protect the loot. And, you know, then you have people guarding the collection points, the evac zones. So it's cool coming at it from different sides.
I wonder if, like, because obviously in Battlefield, your cast is kind of obviously a sensitive subject and how you distinguish those two teams usually in a military shooter.
Yeah.
But in this, you know, it's cops and criminals, cops and robbers.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that affects the mentality of how you played, because I played a couple of games, one as robbers, one as cops. And as cops, we were really like sticking together quite strongly and like seemed like there was a lot more teamwork going on.
Right.
The robbers were just scattering. And obviously that's the nature of kind of the objects they have to do.
Yeah.
But I definitely felt like playing a cop, there was more kind of
so disorganized crime.
I wonder if you've donned the badge, people are like, right, yeah.
Of course, but when I was playing as a cop, I blasted him in the face.
Yeah.
I shot everyone. Even my own team.
Which is
everyone.
Something every unit needs.
You need a wild card, exactly. A loose cannon.
You need a wild card. And,
to pull the team together.
If I know anything about hiring for the police force, you need a wild card, you need a tall man, and you need a man who can do impressions. You need a woman.
Don't you need an Irishman as well?
And you need Steve Guttenberg. Yeah. And then that is your police force.
I watched Police Academy 6 recently, at least some of it.
Which one's that, Mission to Moscow?
No. Was it 6? It was not Citizens on Patrol, the Miami Beach one.
Oh, okay. I saw Mission to Moscow in the cinema.
Wow.
And I was like 8.
Oh my gosh.
What's the plot of the one you watched? Why did you watch that?
Oh, well, it was on, and I started to watch it. I didn't watch it all. Because I thought Steven Guttenberg is not in it. So... I remember loving the Police Academy films from when I was a kid, so I thought I'll go back and watch these. Wasn't good.
You've never seen a Police Academy film? I know, okay. I should, because it's on the list.
I don't know. I think it was of its generation.
Right.
Oh, okay. Well, I like a lot of the Leslie Nielsen comedies and things like that, so it might be.
Oh, you like comedies? You probably wouldn't like these. Pop quiz hotshot.
Yeah.
How many of the Police Academies do you think you can name? Because we kind of skirted around two then.
Oh my god.
So there are seven.
One, yeah.
Okay.
Did they all have subtitles?
Because
I thought it was just Police Academy, Police Academy 2.
Well, that would be easy.
Police Academy.
Police Academy is correct, Alex.
Thank you.
I could have got that. I'm joining in. I've never. Police Academy. That was the first
brilliant.
One.
Yeah, got that one.
Yep. Police Academy 2.
Police Academy 2.
There's a little something, something.
Is there? I don't know.
Do you want
a hint, like a teaser?
You can maybe work it out. Because if at the end of Police Academy, one assumes they graduate.
Right.
So what would happen next?
After graduation, Police Academy, post-graduation.
Oh, I don't know. Just
Their first assignment.
Oh, I'd never have guessed that.
You got one. Okay, three.
See, I can't remember. See,
any more?
Citizens on Patrol was 4.
Yep, so you've got that one.
Yeah. What was the Miami Beach one called? Was it just called, like, Operation Miami Beach?
So close.
What is it?
Think of what... Assignment.
Right, there you go.
And then one more.
What,
six.
Mission to Moscow?
One more, 6. This quiz has gone wrong.
I don't know.
City Under Siege.
Right.
There you go.
I didn't prepare.
There you go. There
so
you
what
go.
Was 3?
3 years back in training.
Ah.
It was so
after
crap.
The first
anyway, back in training after the first assignment.
Anyway, so... Yeah, I think overall, I want to play more of Battlefield. I'm more hooked on GTA right now.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm a co-op player
and
rather
you're
than
methodical and you want to play. And you I think we all like playing with each other.
Mm. Well, here's some of the issues that I've had so far with playing GTA Online Heists. The only problems I'm having...
You're a wild card. That's the first problem.
Yeah, I'm a bit worried.
Lack of shotguns, lack of face blasting.
Where's Gav? Roy shot him in the face.
Well, okay, so I was playing this week with some friends. Unfortunately, only 2 friends, so it means we need a third player. And that process of finding a third player who would either play, wouldn't leave, or was good took about 20 minutes to find someone.
What was the interview process?
Well, you know, I sat them down and I said, how many walkers have you killed? How many people have you killed? Why did you kill them? You know, the standard questions to get them into the crew. And it just took a little bit longer. And I mean, this is just one of the problems that you have because GTA Online Heist has this set narrative and you need a set number of people.
Yeah.
The equivalent of that, the Battlefield Heist, because it's just this kind of chaotic game, there's no set narrative. So you
it's
can
essentially
kind of do...
reskinned Battlefield.
Exactly. So I was able to join a Battlefield game in... seconds, literally. It just got thrown right into the middle of it. It's because of that lack of narrative. So, I mean, there are pros on each side. I think, well, even in Battlefield as well, you have a selection of classes that you can choose.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, your close range, like shotgun class, and you have like a medic, you have your sniper, and then the assault rifle. So I think if you're playing with a big team, you can still have a level of planning and cooperation, and that's probably how you're going to win it as well if you have... people who heal, people who are being stealth.
Yeah, it's your kind of
sides.
Battlefield mentality, I think.
But that's it, right? Yeah. Exactly. There is no element of stealth going on there. Like, because there is
Yeah, in the single player, that seems like a big part of it.
But as a cop, can you bust people in multiplayer?
No.
No.
Right, so if like if you I, try. If I was the cop and you were the bad guy,
it'd be
and
good
I flashed
if you
my bad,
could surrender.
You just
imagine you on the mics, Alex, running into the middle of a battlefield, and you're like, freeze! "Everyone, get down!" And they're just like,
"Freeze!"
littered with bullets.
Freeze, punk.
Yeah,
that's what you say if you're a cop.
Yeah,
I've seen it.
So yeah, it's two different experiences. Yeah. My personal favorite has to be GTA. Mm. You guys?
I'm only doing one heist, but I think Battlefield's got like a new kind of, it's really unfair to say it's a skin, it's got a new brand new setting, just like Call of Duty gets different settings. I think Battlefield has got a new setting and it's called Heist, a lot of fun. Hotwire is a cool mode as well where it's capture the flag but basically with cars that you jack.
I saw that,
that's
really
fun, that's really,
really cool.
Chaotic, so it's just different, and I think if you're into your first person shooters, you're a fan of Hardline, Battlefield, I think it kind of invigorates it a bit.
Again, it's nice to play.
Again, the notion of a heist is better realized in GTA, obviously.
Absolutely.
Well, there's planning involved, right?
Yeah. You're essentially comparing a game mode to a narrative segments.
Yeah, more sculpted thing.
Exactly.
Like,
But speaking of Battlefield, obviously, last week, us three and Gav, who's not here.
Oh boy.
We went to experience Battlefield Hardline Live, which is a competition where you and your crew can take part in a live event somewhere in a secret London location to win £10,000. Now, we took part. We weren't allowed to win £10,000, although we were pretty amazing.
We could have won it, yeah.
Shit hot.
Yeah.
Is the technical term. Yeah. That's the guys came out and went, do you guys rob banks for a living? I was like, no, mate, just easy, innit?
It's pretty good at it.
Day in the life.
We're going to attempt to explain what it is, but without giving away any spoilers, because it's taking place right now. I believe, how do you actually get involved in Battlefield Hardline Live?
I'm just looking that up right now.
So basically what it is, we got taken to this kind of underground, what would you call it? Lair
base,
where there are some bad guys.
Something like that.
And we had to do, well, essentially four things. We had to extract a hostage.
Yep.
We had to find a key card or a key code that opened a vault. And then in the vault, we had to... I'm being very generic about this.
Yeah.
So we're not giving
steal some away. Stuff.
Steal some stuff. And then the fourth part was anything extra we could grab was a bonus.
Yeah.
And we did everything.
Yeah.
In a pretty fast time.
27 minutes, I believe it was. Out of a possible, I think a total of 35 was the max.
Yeah. Yeah.
That we could have had, which put us at the top of the leaderboard for the day of the press event.
Yeah.
So I think we did pretty good.
And I think, like, the way we did it, like, you know, pretty stealthy. Like,
so we didn't set off any alarms. So, again, not going to go into details because people can compete this week. So entry is open until midnight on Sunday the 22nd of March, and you can still enter a team if you go to www.battlefield.com/hardline/live, and that also has a leaderboard of crews that have taken place so far. And I think
that's cool.
So basically it's like this put on by a theatre company that specialise in live interactive experiences, and the thing a couple of years ago, maybe last year, called like The Getaway or something.
I think
like
it was
that.
The Heist, wasn't
the
it?
The Heist, yeah. So it was like this like hour and a half long experience that some people may have even gone to if they listen to this podcast. And they've kind of adapted that, absorbed the world of Battlefield Hardline and created this like splintered narrative. So there's loads of different ways of doing it. And we spoke to some of the teams and they
did
had
it a little differently.
And also like the story kind of went in very different ways and like stuff went down. But
same
we
goals.
Were the only team on the day that did not set off an alarm, which I think is pretty good.
And, you know, again, without wanting to go into details, it was because I
think we can go into details of some of the misadventures that we had like while we were in there.
Yeah, so we went
like breaking a door.
So this is the first one.
This is stealthy mentality.
This is the greatest part of the whole thing. So we get, I mean, we're all geared up. We've got our backpacks, headsets. We're all in stealth mode.
You say all in stealth mode. Like you and
I wore entirely black.
You're entirely black. I'm mainly black. Gav had a combat shirt on. Alex had a red hoodie on because it was
comic relief.
Glowing. You were glowing in the dark. So we get through the vent and we enter this room and we're being all stealthy, trying to coordinate, plan where we're going to move throughout this facility. The first hurdle, literally the first hurdle, is a door. And we tried to open it the wrong way. We didn't know it was a slide door.
It didn't open outwards as a door, or outwards or inwards as a door normally would. So Gav was leading it. And then rather than see if it slid, he just pushed it.
He pushed it up from the bottom like it was on a hinge. So it could have very easily fallen off.
It almost did. Like,
and I think he basically, because he was that much in a tactical Sam Fisher mindset, he opened it and like was ushering us out like we were doing like a base jump, like a parachute jump. Like, go, go, go. It's like, this door slides open.
We were making so much noise. Our backpacks were getting crushed.
Until later on when we went back to the room and the hostage just went, this door slides, mate.
Yeah. So we have given away a bit of a spoiler there. The door opens rather than hinges. Yeah.
But that's
I assume we were the only ones who would prevent people from hurting their heads.
And then we kind of split at that point. So you and Gav went off looking for the VIP.
We all had radio mics as well, so we can keep
And me and Dan immediately got pinned down in the corners. A guard came and he would not leave. He was just doing circles around our vicinity.
He's having a chat on his mobile. No idea how we have reception down there.
Yeah, exactly.
We're in caves. Yeah. But he kept walking up and down. You and I were just like, we'll never leave here. Yeah. So he wasn't moving at all.
At one point, I was doing the cartoon thing where they're rotating around the pillar and I'm doing the same in the opposite direction. Yeah. It was
ridiculous. I have a newfound respect, not that I didn't already, but for like Solid Snake.
Yeah.
Like, how does he know where people are?
Well, that's it. We didn't have mini maps with cones of vision on, right? So really hard. It's worth pointing out, if you're watching the video version of this podcast, you can see our adventures. We've got a video of us getting up to it. If you're listening to the audio version, try and check out the video version.
Yeah, so if you only ever listen to the podcast through iTunes or whatever, go to IGN.com, find the podcast, or you can also find it on YouTube.
IGN.com?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's this thing that gives us money so we can do this.
But, you know, I think, you know, if any of our podcast listeners are getting involved, because I think by this time next week, it will be pretty much finished.
I would really encourage people to hear about it because it was so much fun. I'm trying to think of other things that kind of went... Well, I mean, you got captured.
Yeah, but we can't talk about that.
We can't talk about that?
Actually, no, you can. You'll see it on the video.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what we were allowed to show in the video, and then assuming that that is stuff that we're allowed to talk about.
Like considering I was supposed to be a mastermind criminal, and then like one of the guards came around the corner, shone the torch in my face, and I just went... Hello.
Hello. Hello, I'm Alex.
It's so great. What are you doing down here? I'm a new guard.
I think my actual words were, hello, how are you? I think that's what I said.
Very convincing. And it's great.
You styled it out like a seasoned, hardened criminal.
It's great because from your GoPro, you see him, and in the background, all you can see is us sneaking away into the room.
Thanks for the support, guys. Hey. You could have coached him or something.
You were actually told in the briefing.
No violence.
Do not forget, this isn't a different reality. If you punch someone, you'll still be held accountable.
Yeah.
That's when I put my shotgun
Rory.
Away. Yeah, exactly.
You got your finger by the curb.
Can we talk about the picture?
I think probably better not.
You don't want to say about the picture?
Only thing I would say is that I hope other teams that are competing... don't make the same mistake.
I hope they do. I would love it if people start taking the picture, and then he's like, "Why is everyone taking the picture?"
Okay,
but you'll just watch the video. You'll understand. It is hilarious. It's
a bit sinister.
Bits actually, yeah.
That some strange things happen in Gav's mind.
Exactly.
Like we didn't already know.
Exactly. So yeah, that's Battlefield Live. Look, if you haven't signed up, you should. It's a lot of fun, and I walked away with an anxiety. Not in my stomach.
battlefield.com/hardline/live.
So let's talk about some of the cool stuff that's happened this week.
Yes. So, Nintendo fan. Nintendo has made two big announcements.
Yeah.
The first one is that they're going to start developing mobile games. Now, for me personally, this could go in two different ways. Hmm. This could be games that are made with Nintendo characters that kind of have something to do with the Nintendo universe. Or it could be Candy Crush with Nintendo skins.
I don't think Nintendo will do that.
You don't think so?
No.
Because I could imagine some sort of gimmicky Tetris-esque game.
I think if it's taking them that long to even think about bringing stuff to mobile, I don't think they would ever devalue their characters like that. Because I think part of this is like the Amiibo strategy. It's like licensing it in films and TV shows, Zelda, Netflix. It's all to permeate like the kind of popular consciousness, like a wider audience. You know, when we grew up, people like weaned on Nintendo Power. We watched Super Mario Brothers cartoons. You loved Nintendo stuff. Therefore, when you came to buy a console, you nagged your parents to get you a Nintendo console. Kids today feel like that towards Minecraft and other stuff. Therefore, they never get to a stage where they need or want or nag their parents for a Nintendo console. And I think this, I think they'll make original games that with new characters. I think they'll make new games with their existing characters that still are brilliantly designed Nintendo games. Because I think they've bought shows in the other place, DNA. They've said, like, for back-end expertise and, like, kind of more technical reasons, like, for support, rather than those are the guys who make... Like,
they would actually Nintendo, be making the games.
We're the guys who invented
they know
this
how
shit.
To make games.
We're going to make these games. And I don't, you know, some people in the office, like on other teams, are like, oh, can't wait to get like Mario Kart. You will never, I don't think you'll get a fully fledged Mario Kart on it or a Mario platformer. Because as soon as you do that, you'll have to compete in that space, you'll have to offer it for like $4.99 or whatever. Therefore, no one will ever buy a £40 Mario Kart. So I think it'll be a different version, or it'll be something else. Something
unique.
Do you
think some of the virtual console games will come to mobile? Like the example I always use is like Advance Wars, one of my favorites. Imagine that on iPad, that would be perfect.
There are some games that already, like, obviously you go immediately to Zelda and Mario and stuff. There's so many like series that are perfect for it. Like
Pokemon would be brilliant.
Perfect with NFC.
If you could play Pokemon,
you have it with you all the time.
Oh my god,
Pokemon, definitely. Advance Wars is another one, like you said. Fire Emblem, all those kind of strategy games I think work as good as, if not better, on touchscreen device.
You wouldn't want to play a Mario platformer on an iPad or whatever it might be.
I don't think so.
And also, like, that's like the premium. That's like their Spider-Man. You're not going to give that away. You know, you're not going to put Mario and like ruin his reputation.
Well, you say that, and then the Winter Olympics come along.
That's true. We're frolicking in the snow with a hedgehog.
And also, you say about like devaluing the games. Now, Square puts out a lot of its old back catalogue on iOS for premium prices, like £10-15. So that could be an option.
I just wonder what the control... Maybe they put out a controller that you compare with it.
Yeah.
I just think they're all about user experience. And, you know, they're very much the Apple mentality.
Yeah.
You know, they've always had that Apple mentality of where hardware and software go perfectly hand in hand. They're both designed by the same company. Therefore, it's a seamless experience. Suddenly, their software is going to be on a multitude of platforms they have no say in the design of.
Well, that's it.
That's scary for them.
I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all kind of thing. But also, I think also Iwata said that he was it will be used as a way of getting more people into their consoles rather than an alternative.
Also PC.
PC as well. They said it's going to be cross-platformed.
The other announcement like by this company was to create like a unified, consolidated, that's me, same thing, kind of use like a store kind of user account system.
It works across everything.
So
it was quite vague in the announcement, so I'm really interested to see what exactly that's going to entail.
I almost feel like that got overshadowed because of that and the thing we're going to come on to. They've gone mobile, but the unified system account is something that Nintendo, like, it's bonkers they don't already have that. Like someone who's recently transferred the 3DS, that was a nightmare to like sync up everything.
Well, that's one thing.
Just one account where if you've bought Super Mario Bros. 3 on DS, they go, actually, you can have that on your Wii U for like free, like cross-platform.
Well, the lack of like a social network has like really let them down in the past, because as soon as you know Xbox Live comes and the PlayStation Network, and then the Miiverse,
sure which one it was. It's not consistent that you know how it all kind of works.
It really doesn't, and it just the lacking the basic abilities to voice chat and things like that, and it just it really put a barrier up when I was trying to play Wii games. I remember playing Super Smash Bros. On the Wii, for example. And the only way you could communicate with other players was that you could write custom messages, and then in-game you could tap and it would say the custom message. Which, that's no good at all. That's not going to do anything.
It's true, though. There's still the only place that you can find Nintendo voice chat is on IGN every Friday.
There you go.
Great segue.
but also Splatoon. Squad-based shooter will not have online.
That is crazy.
Voice chat.
That is
so you cannot
crazy.
Coordinate with your teammates online.
Yeah.
What?
That is insane.
It's going to be a bit of a nightmare.
What's the other piece of news?
The other thing that they announced is the NX, which they stated, well, they said they're not going to make any more announcements about it until next year.
Yeah.
So we do have a while to wait, but it should be their new-gen console.
Yeah, they, what do they call it? A hardware concept.
So, a new Nintendo platform codenamed NX. And then this is what Reggie said.
I love Reggie.
We view it as a marriage of the software with the hardware that together creates a compelling experience. What if it's like a... What if it's something that's designed to run more of the mobile offerings?
Well,
like
that's what I wondered. Yeah. I wondered if it's not what we would term a traditional console. Excuse me, console.
Well, people were suggesting that the X is the symbol as a crossover.
Yeah.
So to have that utilized with different platforms and things like that. So, well, I don't know.
This is something people have been rumoring.
As long as they don't call it the Wii 3 or something ridiculous like that.
Because, or the new Wii.
Because we know 3DS does really well.
Yeah.
Nintendo also has great expertise in mobile gaming already. Portable gaming,
handheld
devices.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they've kind of split their market because they've got everyone who loves this stuff. Everyone loves their Wii. Not everyone. A lot of people who have the Wii U love it, and that has kind of a tablet device. It's like you almost wish like they were already in that position where the gamepad is basically replaces your 3DS.
Yeah.
So you can go away and, maybe on the move you can't play Zelda, but you can still play really great advanced games on that tablet that you put in your backpack. And you get home, it docks, and that becomes an integral part of your system. Yeah. That's definitely something Xbox and PS4 don't have.
Yeah.
That would be really cool, I think.
Yep.
It's almost like, X crossing the gap between mobile and console.
Well, the Vita, you can stream your games, right?
You can, cross-play.
Cross-play's
the thingy.
Yeah.
Remote play.
Exactly. Yes. So, I mean, utilizing that with the 3DS, I think there's definitely something that could be done there.
Yeah.
I just don't know how. That's not my job.
Well, you can get involved with your 3DS and with Smash and various things, but it's just not...
It's cool that you can use it as a controller.
I think it's all
this
stuff
that's
kind of been developed and R&D'd at slightly different times, so it's not all at the same stage where it can all just get involved with each other.
Yeah.
It kind of works, but it's not seamless. And
But as we were saying, I think the whole meaning behind the announcement of the NX was just to assure people that they are still making hardware. Because, when you're saying with this announcement, it was very focused on mobile games and, cross-platforming and all these different directions. Mm. But then this was just to say, but we have our own hardware, our own game system.
Yeah. It's an odd thing to do, though, because...
I thought so as well.
Because they're not going to talk... Well, apparently they're not going to talk more about it at E3.
Yeah.
Which, why would you? Because you've still got all these games that are coming out, like New Zelda on Wii U and all that
stuff.
That's
it, Zelda for Wii U hasn't even been released yet.
At what point are people then going to go... actually, I'm not going to buy a Wii U because you're already planning the next one.
I'm going to
wait. It may well be 2-3 years off.
Yeah,
but still.
Yeah, I think I think people, say, "Oh, this is replaced." It's going to just be like a widening of their business.
Yeah.
The media stuff I think is really important. But it's a lot of these things that we won't see the benefits. They won't see the benefits of until a few years down the line when the next generation of kids grow up and it becomes their turn to make the decision on what to buy.
I'm not sure they should have said anything just yet, though.
No.
I would have waited
because
a little longer.
Come out with more of...
That was the problem with the Wii. Yeah. The Wii U. Is that it was a bit like, well, what is it?
I feel like they could have made the mobile announcement and then hold off on the other thing.
Yeah. Because the mobile announcement is huge news.
Landmark.
And then just throwing in after, we're working on another console. Which obviously they are working on another console. But
this is it. I mean, as soon as a console is released, you already have people who are working
on
the next
PlayStation
one.
PlayStation 5 is being worked on right now.
Exactly. But it's just, wait, confirmed. What? Why did I get the 4 then?
Yeah. Also, I think consoles more than any other consumer electronic are brilliant.
Yeah.
It lasts
for
like 6-7 years.
Oh, yeah.
Wii U might be less than that.
You know my opinion on the Apple Watch, which will last an entire year at best.
Yeah. And that's the different thing, because a watch is a piece of technology that's got to a point where you can own a watch for a lifetime.
Yeah.
But introducing a smartwatch changes how you perceive that as an object and how often and frequently you replace it.
Yeah.
That's quite scary.
Are either of you guys going to get an Apple Watch?
No.
I think it's weird because I would really like one, maybe in a couple of years when it's a bit more refined.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't mind getting a new iPhone every 2 years because EE help out with that? Like, it's subsidized. Yeah, I pay quite a bit for my contract, not an obscene amount because I've been with them for ages.
Yeah.
But that kind of makes it easy to get the new one. Whereas a watch, nobody's going to help me out with that. And then I'll be like, lost quite a couple hundred quid on that.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's been quite useful. But I feel like there'd be a lot of...
I just don't see how it could be worth the money that you spend on it. Like, what could it possibly do?
It'd be interesting to...
Or make your life better.
And I also think
people said that about iPads before they came out. Like, people were very cynical.
Well,
like,
I still don't see the use of iPads. I just don't.
Yeah, but the iPad has completely replaced probably my laptop, for example, for watching TV shows. That is my main form of entertainment on my
commute. That's so weird.
Yeah.
I guess, commutes and things like
but
that.
But I don't know how the watch will fit into that. Because if I listen to
watch
music,
it on your watch,
but it's but that,
you're tiny, you're tiny little watch.
It's too small to watch.
I think it's weird because I think an iPad is a way. Loads of stuff has built up to make iPads even more useful for a variety of different people for different reasons.
Yeah.
Netflix and streaming TV make it really cool for some people.
Yeah,
yeah.
And digital comics make it a must-have device for other people. Work stuff make it, you know, for professionals. Whereas the watch, I think, is more kind of. It's almost like an accessibility thing and an accessory that makes other things work. It's almost like a remote control in some ways. It's
very expensive.
Yeah, but that's what it is. But in a couple of years' time, it might have uses that make it... Like, for instance, home automation.
Yeah.
Suddenly, if that's a... You know, in 10 years' time, home automation is, like, standard.
Yeah.
Having that on your wrist might be, like, an essential... Like, a
but
really useful thing.
You've still got to pair it with your phone.
Oh, I'm talking maybe like that, get into your house and it connects directly to your home router or whatever. But like, you know, there might be other things that come along that make it more attractive than it is right now. Yeah. Because when the iPhone launched, it had no apps, had nothing. You know, loads of stuff might come along that make it more value. But I agree with you, the kind of the model of it's not going to be subsidized by a contract or a provider. And then,
Unless the way, obviously, you know, with phones these days, you'll buy into a contract and you'll get an iPad for free or whatever.
Yeah.
It may be like that kind of deal. Replace the iPad in that respect.
Yeah.
But anyway, the new Nintendo's new console is going to be a watch. I think that's basically what we've decided.
Yeah, that would be.
Because the X looks like hands.
On a really confusing watch.
A multi-dimensional watch.
I've got some other exciting news. Titanfall 2 is coming. We've been kind of... rumoured for a while, but Respawn has confirmed it, and at last it's going to be multi-format.
Who did they confirm that to, Alex?
IGN's Luke Kamali. Okay. The Prince.
The Paxman.
The Prince of News.
Excuse me, do you realise I'm the Prince of News? So you have to give me an exclusive scoop?
Yeah.
I can imagine him showing up to that with a little crown.
Little Vince.
Being carried.
Yeah, carried in.
The Dauphin.
What am I then? Am I the pauper of news? Pauper? Did I say that right?
Pauper?
Pauper?
You from Boston?
Pauper?
Pauper news?
Anyway, so I think... I've got mixed feelings on this because I really enjoyed Titanfall.
Yeah.
But there was just no longevity to that game.
Yeah.
Like, people bought it, played it, and then moved on very, very quickly.
And I think that's something we get a little bit of a kicking for in the comments. Yeah. Obviously, get kicking for everything sometimes. Yeah. But... you know, a lot of people reviewed Titanfall really highly and spoke well of it from preview events. I wrote a really long preview where we had the best time. We played it for a day.
It was fun.
So much fun.
It's a fun game.
But then you can't foresee how a game kind of goes.
Well, 3 months later, 6 months
later.
Same
as like when Minecraft came out. No way could you have predicted where that would have gone.
So I think the opposite of that is something like Destiny, which didn't review very well, but since all of its kind of... DLC that's come out has actually become a way better experience.
Yeah, there's more factors than are immediately apparent.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny that Titanfall didn't retain that same kind of attention that Destiny has. Because, I mean, both were, well, I wouldn't say equally big titles, but I mean, Titanfall was pretty huge.
Respawn were first-time developer, but basically, it's Infinity Ward. That's how people
perceive it. Yeah. It was marketed with
money,
that as well.
Loads of money. But then one of the factors is single platform.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing that I always kind of remember reading or hearing about is that, you know, people waiting for ages in lobbies. I even remember, like, playing it and, you know, you had really high-level ranked players, like, crazily high-level, and people like me that dipped in and out. There was nothing in between.
That's the worst.
Because you either got hardcore people that stuck with it because they'd already invested so many hours into it, and then that was off-putting for people. So even if you were trying to do, like, matched games... just
was this enough, how long ago enough, after enough release was this?
I think not even that long. Like, because I interviewed the Respawn guys at E3 last year with Alfredo.
Yeah.
And he's a huge Titanfall player.
Yeah, competitive team.
But the biggest problem that he had with it is that, you know, in terms of competitive gaming, there was zero support from Respawn. All the little things that could have made that, you know, pick up, and, you know, in the same way that Call of Duty is a huge competitive sport.
Yeah, yeah.
There just wasn't that level of support.
And that's like a really, like, fragile stage in its development.
Yeah.
You know, where it could make a big impact.
Yeah, and so that's, and I do wonder whether that's going to kind of impact opinion on Titanfall 2. Obviously, we know nothing about it whatsoever. I assume it'll be
almost. Could it? It's interesting to see whether you know, having that wider release coming to PlayStation 4, obviously 22 million consoles to date. Yeah. Let alone what it'll be at when Titanfall 2 does come out. We don't really know when that is. You know, that could, you know, it go two ways. All those people might go, God, I really wanted to play it first time around. And suddenly it has this new, big, enthused community.
Yeah.
Or it's be like, well, you're a bit late.
I've had my fingers burnt already.
Yeah.
I think it'll be bigger. I think, let alone just being on two multi-platforms, I think that'll double its audience. Yeah. And then, as you said, it, even though maybe the online dropped off a bit, it still does have quite good connotations of the game. Like, people did enjoy it. So I think a second one, people are already like, yeah, I played the first one.
Yeah.
Now I can get it on my Xbox, for example. Oh, wait, no. PlayStation, for example. Yeah. So I think it'll be
bigger. I wonder if they'll
re-examine
what they did with, like, the story mode. Like, whether they'll go, maybe to sustain this world, we do need to flesh it out a bit more.
Yeah.
And a really good way of doing that is kind of a narrative. Yeah. Even if it's co-op and they don't abandon the kind of multiplayer mentality.
To use Destiny as a we would definitely put a multiplayer example of that. Yeah.
You know, story.
Destiny.
Yeah.
There is a story, it's just really hard to understand. But at least you feel together. Like you're going in a direction.
And you play with your mates.
Yeah. Because, like, the, I can't remember, what did they call the multiplayer campaign? They gave it a funny name. Anyway, it was a real
something
kind of like
dynamic,
like
or
bullshit,
something.
Like marketing phrase. I can't remember. Anyway, it really was basically a bunch of multiplayer match pulled together. That was it.
Oh, that sounds awful.
Yeah. So it didn't really work in that respect. And, you know, maybe it doesn't need to work in that respect. But
no,
I think
that's true.
At least either do it that, don't go the half-assed method. I'd rather have something that was a little bit kind of more narratively driven.
Well, as you said, it's Infinity Ward. It's a big studio. So there should be more than enough people.
Respawn.
Oh, it's Respawn?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, then
they're screwed.
The people who left Infinity Ward.
All right. Right. That's what I meant. That's what I meant.
Yeah. There you go. That's Rory's mistake for this week.
Yeah, that's what the energy... Whoa, my God.
Hopefully just...
Well, then
I've
got a couple I'm just going to be banking for next week and the week after that.
Okay.
And
pressure's on. Pressure's on.
And then, yeah.
Final bit.
You spoke about it earlier, but...
Brighton.
You went down to Brighton.
Went down to Brighton with Rich for this week of IGN First. So this month on IGN First, you know what IGN First is. It's basically we bring you a month's worth of exclusive on a game that
Sweet
we're really
games.
Excited about. For March, we did something a little bit different. We did a week. So far, we've done a week on a different indie game. So the first week, we did Ollie Moss's... the game is on the art file called Firewatch. We've got 17
Which
minutes
looks
footage.
Amazing.
Looks gorgeous. Yep. Next week we did the space of, like, kind of disaster game Adrift.
Yeah.
And this week we're doing Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, which was a PS4 exclusive, started life as a PC game. It's made by a small studio called The Chinese Room, which are based in Brighton.
Why are they called The Chinese Room?
I think Chinese Room, I think it's like a thought experiment. I think it's got something to do with, like, Schrodinger's cat and, like, what's inside the box you don't know until you open it. But then, so, like, indeterminate. Blah, blah, blah,
I really want to look it up right now.
So they started off way back when two of them, a guy called Dan Pinchbeck, who did a PhD and was a professor in game studies, and his wife, Jessica Curry, who is a composer for film TV.
Right.
And they worked on this narrative called Dear Esther. This guy worked up this mod of a game into the award-winning Dear Esther.
Yeah.
And then they worked on the sequel to Amnesia. Machine for Pigs. And now this is kind of their first proper game, because those two were kind of, I think they regard them as one as an experiment, and the second one is kind of, they were basically a mod team of Amnesia. And this one is their first proper game. They're working with Sony Santa Monica, and it's going to just come to PlayStation 4. That's what we know at the minute. And it's like a really interesting game. We've got 30 minutes of footage on the site. A
ton of stuff on the
site. I did like a big preview, and we've got something else going live today when the podcast goes live as well on the music. So it's, I don't know how to pitch it to you. Well, so just give you a brief.
So actually, there's
kind of feedback.
It's the piece of feedback. It says, when will we get a Midsummer Murders style, GTA style game? And I've only seen the footage, but forget the GTA bit, but it felt like Midsummer Murders.
Did you actually hear what I said the other day? I think we were watching the footage. I don't think you were there. I actually said, oh, can finally make that Midsummer Murders game.
Well, there you go.
And that is really glib. It's not like Midsummer Murders.
Eugene Johnson says the same thing, but just the environment itself.
Yes.
You
start off, it's on a very specific day in 1984 in the summer, and you start outside a small, quaint British village, a fictional village called Yorton, set in Shropshire. And it's beautiful. It's an idyllic world, but this is a post-apocalyptic game. The world has come to an end, and you're kind of the last man, last woman. And you're walking through the village, and it's literally like everyone's just disappeared. So you find...
There's no wreckage or anything like that.
There's just like parked cars with doors open, there's bags on the floor, bicycle, and you just start to explore. And, you know, there are radios you can listen to and transmissions, and you just kind of want to work out what's happened to all these people.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing things in the environment. Now, there's bits of blood here and there, just like little spots.
Uh-oh.
And then you realize that maybe people have had nosebleeds, I think.
Right.
And then you find a sofa, and beside the sofa there's a toilet roll, and on the floor there's more blood, and you're like, oh, somebody had a nosebleed. And then
and then
what happens when you're in certain locations is there's this kind of light that zips around the village, and it kind of manifests into the shapes of people who begin to reenact their last moments on Earth, you think.
Yeah.
So there's a woman in a house, and she's talking to a man, and he's like, where are the kids? And she's like, oh, David took them upstairs a couple hours ago. They started bleeding. And he's like, how are they now? And she's like, oh, they didn't come back down. And you walk upstairs, and you go into the bedroom, and you go, God, what am I going to find? And of course, like everyone else, they've disappeared.
Yeah.
And the room's just like really, like, it's got a really kind of musty air to it. Yeah. And there's a drawing on the side done in crayon that says, like, mummy and daddy.
Right.
And it's like really harrowing and bleak.
Quite sinister.
And it's also like made more so by the fact that, you know, not everything's on fire. There's no explosive barrels. It's because you're in like an everyday house, like with everyday objects. You know, it's like a crappy little kitchen, or is a three-piece sofa that has a bum groove in it.
You like your three-piece sofa and your folding chairs.
You're
folding
tables. There's a bit where you go up, because right at the beginning you go into the bush shelter, and there's two posters. One that's saying there's an amateur production of Peter Pan, and there's another one that says there's an emergency meeting that night in the school.
Yeah.
Eventually, if you want, you can get to the school, go inside, and you realize there's all these tables and chairs laid out. Mm. And they're like foldable tables that you have at schools, and stackable chairs, like stuff you don't really see in video games.
Yeah.
And it's almost like near photorealistic.
Yeah.
And then you start, obviously you hear these bits where the spirits come back to life, if they are spirits. But a lot of the story you kind of glean from just the way stuff's arranged.
Yeah.
Like there's a bit in the town meeting, and there's only six chairs, one facing five.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, this is a town meeting. Why are there not more chairs?
Yeah.
Why are they arranged like that? Is it one person addressing five, or is it an interrogation?
Yeah.
And you start like, even though you're just walking around, some of the comments are like, oh, what do you actually do?
Yeah.
It's like, even though I'm just walking around, I found it actually quite demanding, because I'm like, trying to basically be a detective, working out how the world came to an end. That's really interesting.
There's such a risk and reward with those kind of games, where it's like maybe the pacing is a little bit slower and there's not an immediate gratification.
Mm.
But if it's done well, and what it sounds like, I'm just interested about you describing it. I played like 20 minutes,
so...
Yeah.
And you can't like run and stuff, but the environment's beautiful enough that it's a pleasure to walk
through it. If it's done right, then, you know...
But it's like really weird, because I think it like... Because... small team, and the team are really on board with the story. It's not like they've been like, make a load of houses. The artists know who lives in each house, and they dress it accordingly. So there's like an old farmhouse off the street, and you're like, oh, this is probably a farmer. You go inside and you realize it's maybe like the wealthiest couple in the town, because inside it's got really like chic 1980s furniture.
You're
like, this is weird. who lives here. Yeah. And then you hear all these things, because obviously rapture is a big word. It's like it's got proper religious connotations and other connotations. And you don't know whether something religious has happened or whether something scientific's happened, because there's talk about an experiment. You can hear,
oh, this sounds
you can
awesome.
Hear a message that someone says, like, if you can, get to the observatory and turn off the optical array.
Right.
And these like kind of lights that go around the village, they kind of look angelic when they make people, like the shape of people, because they're like gold and they're glowing and shimmering. But they also kind of look like atoms or electrons like dancing together. So you're like, is this something supernatural or is this something scientific? And then you'll find the vicar and the doctor arguing in the village, like, is this a man of faith, a man of science?
Right.
And you're like, what the hell has happened here? And then that's when my kind of demo ended.
Right.
And I was like, this is pretty brave stuff. So it left
you wanting more.
Yeah, and I think it's really kind of, you know, I spoke to the people for quite a while I was there. I was there all day. And, you know, they really are trying to, like, make story and character into mechanics.
So they're
interested, like working out what's going on, like you would in a novel. They want to make that into a satisfying game experience rather than story washing over you.
Yeah.
And then now it's time to shoot stuff or like avoid stuff. It's like, this story's on you.
Yeah.
If you want to know this story, you have to actively piece it together.
Okay.
And not kind of like by reading loads and loads of like menu items you've picked up, like some games.
Mm-hmm.
Slap on the story after the fact. It's literally just all there for you to like see and watch and find.
That sounds cool. So that in the game, do you play the cop or the robber? Like which one is
it? You can shoot the vicar and the doctor in the face.
Okay, just clarifying. But there is like an overarching story like throughout the whole thing?
I guess so. Like they're being intentionally coy about the rest of it. Because I think it is... They say it's an apocalypse about the people rather than what created the apocalypse. But I think that is...
I'd love it if there
I
was...
I think that
like
is a mystery.
Eventually leading
to
something.
Yeah, and I think these people, maybe they've brought about the rapture.
Oh,
there's
so
something...
Cool.
That's one of the things that's pulling you through this world.
Yeah.
Is that... sorry, I've really gone on about it. But I think it's like really interesting game.
Well, the thing is... We've got a ton of stuff on site, so like, if you want to read more...
Yeah, if nothing else, watch that video.
Definitely check it out on site.
It looks
right
beautiful.
Now. So those are the good things that have happened this week. Something not quite so good, and I'm disappointed, is the trailer for Pixels, which is the new Adam Sandler movie.
Yeah.
You guys seen it?
I have watched
that. So the premise
is,
we send a probe up into space with some of the kind of most iconic things that... we've worked on, i.e. Space Invaders.
Which are incidentally all video games. And
Do you want to send this Michelangelo stuff?
But no, just like, I don't know, an arcade version of Pac-Man or whatever. Anyway, aliens interpret it the wrong way and then send Space Invaders down to attack
it's
Earth.
Quite
I don't
sad.
Understand the logic, though. Like, why if...
Why is Donkey Kong there?
Yeah.
But like, what if they take that as a message of war, why would imitate...
Would they replicate? Yeah,
I don't know.
I feel quite bad because me and Luke had the same kind of reaction when we were watching the trailer. Is that, you know, linked to video games, we're like, okay, the visual effects are amazing. Mm. And I can really appreciate them from that standpoint. But I felt kind of bad. As soon as Adam Sandler appeared on the screen, we both went, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no. And it
he
just
used
completely.
To be all right at one point, right?
Happy Gilmore?
He was,
fantastic film.
His early movies, but also he was once on the cusp of like... leaving all this behind, like becoming a proper actor. Like he did Punch Drunk Love with Anderson.
Yeah.
Like proper movie with a proper director.
Yeah.
And he was like really critically acclaimed for it. And then he just got pulled back into the crap.
Into grown-ups.
Into the mire.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly... I actually like the idea of it. I think it could be quite fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But the way it's executed is just so cheesy and terrible. And like some of the lines he comes out with, it's like, oh my God, if this is the best... of the film that's in the trailer, I'm oot. And they're doing Dragon's Den.
Yeah.
Oot. That was
weird. It says Pac-Man, there's Donkey Kong, there's Centipede.
Space Invaders.
Q-Bert's not in there, is he?
I didn't see him.
I don't think
apparently
so.
Missile Command.
Do you know if you put your finger in your ear and scratch, it sounds like Pac-Man?
Does it?
You put it in and move it up and down. Like that.
Oh my God! That's crazy.
Everyone's just doing that now.
What?
So we'll just give
guys,
everyone a minute.
Do this. Everyone listening to the podcast, put your finger in your...
He's so easy to please.
entertainment now for 2 weeks. I'm going to get home from work, close the door, and do this.
That's Rory gone.
Skype my mum. You're never going to guess what happened.
Is that what you
put your Skype finger in your ear. Oh, why am I? Yeah, talking to my
girl. Skype's a bit different in Ireland, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hello.
Turn your radio to two, mum. Turn it to two.
Who's this appealing to? Pac-Man, Space Invaders, Centipede?
Well, that's weird.
Not that they're not great, important games, but...
But that's it. From the way it's pitched, it feels like it's going to be a kids' movie. But I'm pretty sure that no kids will have any idea who...
Well, that's it. It's all retro games.
Gaming icons are.
Predating all of their births.
I don't know.
But, I don't know if it was based on... There is a short film that's about something similar, like a giant-sized Pac-Man going around, I think it was Manhattan or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that is a direct influence of this or...
It was. It's based on the short film.
Yeah.
I think this is what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's been adapted into this.
But the short film was great.
Yeah.
And I kind of wanted that. But then...
I don't like that bit where she goes, "Gentlemen, these are your ghosts."
Oh, man.
No, the mini bloody Coopers.
Yeah, I don't really understand that.
I don't know... What?
What does that even mean?
If all our tanks ain't doing crap, what... Maybe, I don't know.
Science. And the fact that, they've got some science on top to make it work.
They've got Binky as the kind of number plates and stuff like that.
Do you know the name of all the Pac-Man ghosts?
Binky, Rinky,
Is this going to be another quiz?
No, yeah. I don't.
They've got either. 10 different names depending
Binky.
On different versions and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that another pop quiz?
Yeah.
No.
What was Pac-Man originally called in America as an arcade cabinet?
Puck-Man.
Yeah, and why did they change it?
Because it was too easy to deface the machine.
There you go.
Yeah, thanks, Scott Pilgrim.
Paku, paku, man.
Helping me out there.
There you go. Paku, anyway.
Paku. I'm going to do the ear thing again. This is crazy.
If you're listening or watching this podcast...
Can you do two at once? I don't know if I can do two at once, actually. This might be a little bit too much. Holy crap.
Yeah, that's the reaction when Pac-Man's inside you.
That's right.
Wow, there you go. Anyway, if you are listening or watching this podcast and you actually think that Pixels looks kind of good, then please let us
prove
know
us
why.
Wrong. Yeah.
IGN_UK feedback at IGN.com. Read your feedback. Rory, you're up first.
Well, look,
if
you
guys,
I said this before.
Out of your ear for a second.
You guys have made a huge mistake because you've given me 4 emails and I can't make it through one without mispronouncing
word. If you put your finger somewhere else and do that motion, it makes the noise of another popular video game character.
Go.
Liam Crossy.
Liam.
Don't even. Duck Hunt, he says. Hey guys, love the show. If I had to choose 3 movies to watch as a marathon, I would watch Pulp Fiction, Fargo, and The Social Network back to back.
Yeah. So this is in response to something
we talked about
last
week.
Because they're showing Nolan's trilogy, I think at IMAX or something like that. Mm. And I thought the kind of 3 films had to be related.
Yeah, well, this just seems like 3 films that
Liam
enjoys.
Maybe we weren't specific enough.
No.
Well, I mean, do they have to be related? Or can you just choose... Because Gav was saying he wants 1 Indiana Jones, 1 Star Wars, 1
No, but then we were talking about trilogies.
Oh, trilogies, okay.
Yeah.
You know they're doing... several places are doing screenings of all the Marvel movies to date and then ending in the Avengers.
Oh, my God.
Screw
that.
How
many hours is that?
Imagine... Just do it at home. If you want to do that, I think do it at home.
What's the very first Marvel movie?
Iron Man.
Was it the first Iron Man?
That's the first Marvel Studios.
Oh, yeah.
And you get to Iron Man 2.
Incredible Hulk's up next.
Oh, no. I forgot about the Hulk.
Is it? Yeah, it's kind of that.
Which Hulk was that?
Norton.
Was that canon. Is it? Right. Okay,
yeah.
I never realised that.
They've kind of retconned it, but...
Right.
How many hours would that be?
I thought he was great in Birdman.
20 odd hours. I think he's great in Birdman because from everything I've read and heard, that's how he is.
Yeah.
I think that casting was intentional.
Yeah. Because I thought, I know we're going off on a tangent a little bit.
Sorry, Liam.
I thought Keaton was brilliant in Birdman. I thought Norton was brilliant in Birdman. Overall, I thought it was a good film. I didn't think it was great.
No.
Oh, I really liked it. I thought it was great.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But it was those 2 performances that shine.
Yeah, he's great in it, isn't he?
He's brilliant in it.
It's a really anti-superhero movie as well. Like, I love the fact when they're recasting that role and he goes, "Get me this person." No. Fassbender. No, he's in the new X-Men movie. Get me Renner.
Yeah.
They put him in a cape too. Is it an Avenger?
Yeah.
Crap.
Yeah.
And then they get the Hulk.
Yeah.
You're an Avenger, Dan?
The guy who spat him out. I am an Avenger.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, Scarlett Johansson said she would. So.
I do agree with The Social Network.
She did.
That is one of my favorite
she
films.
Captain America,
she's fantastic.
Man. So next up, Thomas Meadows. I think my ideal three film marathon would be Caddyshack, Groundhog Day, and Blues Brothers. Groundhog Day, I personally think, is an utterly perfect comedy. I think many people agree with you there. Bill Murray at the height of his powers and directed by the late, great Harold Ramis.
I like the fact that he's at the height of his powers.
That is an amazing.
It's like shooting comedy out of his fingers.
Such a good film.
Also like a poignant comedy, like touching comedy, smart comedy. It's really good.
I really wanted to, after watching that film, set my alarm in the morning as that song, I Got You, Babe.
Yeah.
So it's like every morning when you wake up, you'd be like, I got you, babe. Dun, dun. And you'd be like, is this again? Is this happening again?
Quite quickly.
I assume we
did. Probably. On day two.
I assume we didn't do it because I didn't see all the negative comments or praise for it. But when it was Groundhog Day anniversary recently, we did toy around the idea of running every single piece of IGN content from the day before.
News,
Oh my God, that would have been amazing.
And then I think
it would have been awful, but it would have been.
Well, it's quite a lot of work, isn't it?
But also,
the website wouldn't run for that day.
There would be a lot of people who didn't get the J.
Yeah,
it's a lot of work for a very
lame IGN, slow news day
for
IGN.
One guy who gets the J.
Also, I imagine this relates to something you talked about last week. Otherwise, Thomas has gone totally off beast. He says, also, anyone who puts ketchup in the fridge is some sort of sadist.
Where do you keep your ketchup?
What?
I have one in the fridge and one in the cupboard.
That's
one in reserve.
I really
love ketchup.
So,
is one an emergency ketchup?
Where do you
ketchup?
Serve your ketchup from then?
If bottle.
Brilliant.
You hate me right now.
I'm punch
face.
You so hard in the face.
So
you use the fridge one though, right?
So when I grew up, it used to be cupboard.
Yeah.
And then later in life, I experimented, as you do when you're at university. You experiment. People said to me in Freshers Week, you're going to experiment with stuff at university.
You're like, oh boy.
I'll put the ketchup in the fridge. Yeah. And, you know, it's good. It's good to have cold ketchup sometimes on hot things.
It is.
I completely disagree.
So are we talking about what we think from a sanitary, hygienic sense? Because it doesn't matter, does it? What does it say on the bottle?
It says keep refrigerated.
Yeah.
But
what more proof do you need? That's so black and white.
But on tables,
ketchup
but on
is
tables,
telling you.
But in restaurants, it's not.
Jeez Louise.
I'm excitable. I shouldn't have had that.
But everything has, in this day and age, everything's keep refrigerated, eat within 3 days of consuming, which is utter horse crap.
It depends. But the thing is also, I think it's almost two forms because sometimes cool ketchup is ooh.
I like it, yeah.
Sometimes
it's like having cold milk with your cereal.
Is only edible with warm ketchup or
room temperature ketchup.
I don't wait.
Yeah,
boiling ketchup.
You should be able to put the tip of your finger in it, and there's no.
I do
put your elbow.
Tip,
you dip your
finger.
Elbow in it and test it.
Red Nose Day.
Anyway, Kyle writes in saying, "Hey guys, just a quick email regarding the question you asked last week about how you would like to see us critiquing and reviewing new TV shows that all get released at the same time." But he has a suggestion.
I suggested Blindfolded.
He's got a different suggestion.
Okay, probably better.
He says, how about a I can't even speak. Gogglebox-like style.
Gobblebox.
So with you and Gav in your pants, sat there in the flat that you obviously share.
Yep.
I did think... hilarious.
It's like Men Behaving Badly. I actually did think about this, and then I read the email. And I thought, that is a good idea. I spoke to Gav about it. I actually would love that. If we could come in on Friday, the 10th of April at 8 a.m. and watch every single episode of Daredevil back to back. But the only problem is use footage of Daredevil.
Right.
Because you have to subscribe to Netflix. Yeah, yeah. And we obviously friends with Netflix. They gave us the trailer exclusively for a bit. I think we massively pee them off if we use clips. Because I think Gogglebox kind of works because you've seen what they're reacting to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Say at the end of Daredevil, there's a big twist or reveal. You kind of want to do a little insert of that.
And then
you can't just do the reaction.
It is tricky. I would actually love to do that.
I was going to say Gav's money shot, but nobody wants to see that.
All in the beard. All in the beard. Matted. Like a sexy X-rated twit.
Nice.
That's lovely.
Move on quickly.
I'm a little afraid to move on because I don't know how to pronounce this guy's name. His second name?
Win.
Win? Oh, okay. That wasn't as hard as I thought it was going to be. Winey, it looks like.
My God. What's
Dylan this? Winey.
Amazing.
Boom, mother duckers. No hate mail here. I actually wrote No, I actually wholeheartedly agree that the movie Watchmen ending was better than the comic. Yeah. Okay, so this is what Gav was talking about last week.
Yeah.
Far more in keeping with the Cold War theme of the era.
Yeah, so I finished watching Watchmen. Watching The Watchmen.
Who watching The Watchmen? On your watch? On your Apple Watch? You watch The Watchmen on your watch?
No, on my iPad. That's what I use it for. Man, that film is long. Oh.
Well, you watched the director's cut as well.
Yeah, I know. I didn't realize
it was the director's
cut.
The actual one. I know it's long. It's over like two
It's about 3.25 hours long.
Yeah.
Which is too long. And actually, at the end of it, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
But the first hour, oh my God, it drags.
I do think the ending's really good because I think that's the one point in the movie where it really adapts it and does its own thing, whereas everything else it's just so kind of shot for shot. It's like, why have you adapted that? You don't use the comic as a storyboard.
Yeah,
use it as a jumping off point.
Yeah, there's a lot of blue penises in that film, though.
Yeah,
is there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did I watch the same film?
Doctor Manhattan's.
He doesn't have a blue dick.
He's got
he has
a giant
one.
What are you on about?
Chunk, what? Doesn't he? Like a bulge. I didn't think you actually saw.
No, he's massively.
He's got a full on schlong.
Are you sure this isn't
the
director's
cut? Yeah, I promise you. No,
he's got a massive.
He hasn't had his director cut, as far as I can tell.
He pops a little blue pill, gets a massive blue.
Yeah.
Maybe I just blanked this from my memory, completely erased it. I did not know that. Now I'll have to rewatch it.
You've never seen Smurf porn?
No.
Thundercat porn?
It's on the list, though. Let's do a Gogglebox
for
that.
Gargle Mel. Anyway, can anyone explain? I don't know who this is from. No
can
name.
Anyone explain?
No, can anyone explain how to use email? No. Can anyone explain how Tomb Raider, Assassin's Creed, and Uncharted are all unique franchises? Besides story, what will Uncharted 4 in 2016 do differently in setting, combat, weapons, or traversal that would be any different than what I will already be seeing on consoles in 2015 from Tomb Raider and Assassin's Creed?
I think
these adventure games are reaching sports and racing game parity. Which of the three are you most excited for?
I think, first of all, to say story aside, because that's kind of the whole point
I think that,
of these kind of games.
I think we went back, like, we talk about everybody's gone to Rapture.
Yeah.
It's like, story, I think, with some video games, it's totally incidental, and it's not a bad thing. Like, Mario.
Yeah.
Story's incidental to Mario, to the point where it's pretty much always the same basic premise. Because Mario's about, doing brilliant mechanics and, like, giving him amazing power-ups and make it really fun. I think Uncharted's story and its likability of his characters are the thing that's made
it
a success, I think, and how beautiful it looks. I think those are the two things that have really elevated it.
Because I know a lot of people that when they were playing Uncharted 2, they put it on the easiest setting because they didn't want the kind of the gameplay to get in the way of the storytelling.
Yeah.
So I think to say story aside is kind of, well, that's the biggest draw of those games. Yeah. And, you know, equally for Assassins and for Tomb Raider.
I think if you come into it purely for like maybe gunplay and stuff, I really liked what they did in the last Tomb Raider. I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. I thought, because I never thought gunplay was Uncharted's strongest suit at all, really. But I thought Tomb Raider is pretty good in that respect. And Assassin's Creed this year is the Victorian London one.
Yeah.
So I think
that'll be really different.
Hopefully it does give it a different feeling. I don't know, I'm just maybe just saying that because we live in London, but I hope it has a bit more of a. I think they're due a really great Assassin's Creed game.
Yeah.
Like, it's been a long while.
It's a long time.
Since a really great. I know, like, people like Black Flag, and I think it was a shot in the arm, but if they can. They need a really. A 9.5, like a really great one that everyone's talking about.
To do something
also
fresh.
I know Unity was just next gen and it did introduce some good new things, like these big sandboxes to play around in. I just think it needs a bit more of a shake up.
I just don't know if it's possible when you're developing that many games, you know, if you're trying to, like, I agree that Assassin's Creed has hit the kind of annual release sports game fatigue. Less so for Uncharted and for Tomb Raider. But yeah, I just can't see how they're going to do that with Assassins. It feels like they've stuck to their guns.
It's so established already, mechanics and the stories and things like that.
But
it's,
they're going to have to take a serious amount of time off to reinvent that franchise, I think.
And I don't at least see it happening with this new game. No. I think the change in environment could drastically kind of change how the game feels, but I still think it's probably going to be very similar mechanics and gameplay.
Yeah, so the subject line of this email is, with the delay, will Uncharted 4 look redundant? And I just think, and then he also ends like, which of the three are you most excited for? I would still say probably Uncharted 4. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's Uncharted, and I think it has such value.
And Naughty Dog always deliver a decent gaming experience.
It's their next game following one of the best games ever made.
Yeah, yeah.
By the same two guys.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did everyone play that?
Love Crash Bandicoot.
All right, next one.
You've got the next piece of feedback.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
This is from Kevin Tarn, I think. I have a question regarding the gaming BAFTAs that just happened and would like your thoughts. Destiny picked up Game of the Year, and to be honest, I was a little shocked. Not to say it isn't a good game, but it wasn't exactly received with the highest praise on release. No story, very few areas, and repetitive gameplay being the main complaints. So how did it walk away with the award?
It's like I was saying earlier, I guess, is that the experience you get now, if you've invested time in that game, is so, so different to what it was like at review. Like, because by all accounts, like the Vault of Glass...
And we
like
waited Protus longer Raid, than a lot of outlets.
Yeah.
So we tackled
those two things were the kind of big game changers, and all the weekly stuff they do, you know, Xur stuff, all that kind of stuff.
It's just, it's a game that
transforms the game.
It's a game that's been built for sustainability.
Yeah.
There's just constantly...
10-year plan? Some new thoughts about Once Upon a Time.
Yep. New DLC. As you said, there's weekly challenges, missions, things like that. The raids that keep coming out. Yep. They seem to be enough to keep people entertained and keep people playing the game.
Yeah, definitely. Like, they've structured it with a view into mind, like to ration it. And I do think they missed a trick by not letting you do a raid like at level 12, like heist. Because if we were all playing heist and then you had to be like level...
The equivalent of
30, that's level 100 and whatever.
It's 100.
Really, that's like for the elite, the commitment.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, that's how I feel a bit in Destiny, because I stopped playing it because of other stuff and work and whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, other stuff's come out, I'm into other things now, but I can't play a raid.
Yeah.
If there was one now, like for level 10 and we could all do it, that'd be brilliant. That'd be and then... I think that would help incentivize grinding or whatever.
That is really strange, to release DLC that's only playable by a certain level.
Especially if you want to be Crota, like tackle Crota, you've got to be level 31. You've got to work really hard to get to level 31.
But I mean, maybe that's part of it, because I see a lot of people, you know, posting videos of them doing the raid and things like that, and it does seem like this huge accomplishment, or at least especially at launch when... People just like, we don't know how to beat him. Like, we need to keep going back in. We need to keep grinding, getting better weapons. And maybe that does kind of fuel the amount of hours put in, because you are putting in more hours to beat these extremely hard challenges. Sure, but then obviously that's just for the top tier of
I am surprised by how many people I know or that I follow on Twitter that are investing that much time. Well, people who have never kind of expressed that much interest in playing those kind of games before. So it's definitely done something new there. But you're right, by locking it behind that kind of elite gate, the drop-off must be huge, because I really enjoyed Destiny, and I think we got up to level 17, I got to.
I think there are other impediments that kind of like stopped us from progressing, other things coming out, but also like technical problems we had that kind of just put us off. But we did love it at the time, it's just I haven't persevered, so I don't feel like I'm best positioned to really comment on later value of the game.
Yeah.
But the thing I loved about Heist is that you can get to level 12 in a couple of hours.
Yeah, definitely. And then then heists are open to you. And you might be able to do them on easy, but you might not be able to do them on normal or hard.
Yeah.
And then it feels like to get all the rewards and then, you know, you're talking about playing them multiple times on different difficulties. That's pretty good, isn't it?
Did Rory tell you about the car he bought in GTA?
Which one? Last night.
Have you bought another one?
Well, I bought that one that you hate. My little pink sporty one.
Was that the one that in the office? But you bought one for your Xbox.
Yeah, my Zentorno.
725,000. He's
got money to burn, haven't you?
Well, that's all of it. It's gone. That was all my money from when I started the game.
Do you want to buy a nicer flat?
No, I have it. I have.
You got heist.
I have a baseline 10 car apartment, which is just enough for heist. So I mean, I have that. I never go in my apartment.
I really
want to
buy
the same thing.
So I noticed on the property website it says updated interior. Does that just mean heist room or our balls?
I believe so.
I really want to upload my own JPEG so I can have my own artwork on the walls of my apartment.
Just a picture of you naked.
That'd be cool. I always want to do that.
Smurf.
Follow me on Twitter at Krooper. You find one of them every day.
But that's because you were like, I've bought a more expensive apartment.
Same.
So I walked around.
Exactly,
I was like,
the same.
Mine's worse. I don't even have a balcony.
I don't have a balcony.
You have a balcony?
No. Where did I see you, like, on? I thought you were on a balcony having a scotch the other day when on your screen.
No, I wasn't.
Like, just you.
I love
your avatar is really good.
I love
you it. Said you were waiting for me to do something. I looked at your screen and your character was just having like a scotch.
I wasn't on a balcony.
Or maybe you were in a cutscene then.
Right. I don't know.
I thought you had a balcony. I was like, why is my freaking apartment? I paid like 100 grand more.
I love the thought of you on your break at work just have a scotch on your virtual balcony.
I don't like when you go into wardrobe, there's loads of women's clothing, and I go, whose is this shit?
I don't know.
Buy anything.
I think you'd look great in knee-high
but
boots.
You can't try it on. No. I would be totally fine if I could put that stuff on. Because then,
Would you
yeah,
be fine?
I, would. Like,
I wouldn't be fine.
Yeah, I would. Right. Oh, that says more about you. I'm comfortable. I'm comfortable in both a dress and a muumuu.
Yeah. What's a muumuu?
A muumuu, it's the dress that Homer gets when he becomes super fat Homer.
Oh, okay. The flowery one?
One of my favourite episodes of The Simpsons.
That's a great episode.
Because he goes to the fat man shop and they say to you, so you can get a muumuu, you can get a kit. He's like, I don't want to look like a freak just because I'm big. You sure you don't want anything? No, I'll take the muumuu, the hat, and the cape.
The cape just ties it all together.
Yeah.
It's a good car. It's a really fast car.
I'm saving up for the buzzard. So what I can do is fly after you and then rocket the crap out of your car.
Well, I hope you're ready to pay some insurance on my Batmobile.
Worth it, I think. Worth
the satisfaction.
It.
Worth
I want us to, like, I need to get on high, because I want us to, like, get, like, jets and stuff and be able to, like, fly together and stuff like that.
We're lacking a fourth man.
Gav. Yeah.
Goddamn
unbelievable.
Most unreliable man in the criminal underworld.
Right, email here from first-time writer in Carl Barrett. This week it was revealed that the Christmas special of Sherlock would be set in Victorian London. What do you guys think of this news? Personally, I don't like it.
Is it going to be alongside Assassin's Creed?
It's tie-in.
Maybe.
Tie-in. That's Fassbender.
One of the reasons why he doesn't like it is because, obviously, these episodes of Sherlock don't come around very often.
No.
And
it feels a bit of a cheat, considering it's almost like they proceed like the Christmas special is not in continuity. Now, that might not be the case. There might be stuff in the episode that like frames it. But it feels like you're taking it out of the continuity of the main show. Because it ended on a cliffhanger with, I had to look up his name, I couldn't remember him, Magnusson.
Yeah.
It had like a dramatic finale. I think Sherlock, my spoilers, somebody said not to give away spoilers.
Yeah.
So something happens, there's a cliffhanger, and so on. And it feels like this is just ignoring that, and you'll have to wait for that resolution even further.
Yeah, because the only thing that I wondered if, because obviously there was talk about Sherlock coming this Christmas, but I wonder if they're just going to drop this one, and it could be another year after that.
I think it might be. Well, he's got to go off and film Doctor Strange pretty soon. And they're going to have to work around that schedule, let alone what Thingamabobs.
It's so impressive the show can retain its audience through such.
But that's because it's consistently good.
That's true. Well, yeah, well, maybe that's why it's consistent.
I wasn't a big fan of the last series.
No, the last series I thought was good. The individual episodes didn't work that well.
No, I thought the finale of the last season was great. Yeah. I really like that episode. Yeah. So it's, I'm not a big fan of it. Also because, like, you know, seen Victorian Sherlock quite a lot.
It feels like the kind of Doctor Who route, right?
It's a bit. I think it's just a bit cute. Yeah. Like, truly the whole remit of the show was to do modern day Sherlock Holmes and take those character dynamics that are still good, regardless of setting.
Yeah.
Because if you want Victorian Sherlock Holmes, you know, Arthur Conan Doyle wrote shitloads of them.
Yeah.
So go check them out. They're really good.
Yeah.
And so it's. I don't know whether there might be more to the episode than meets the eye.
Yeah.
The Transformers.
We know very little about it, so. This email is from Adam Lees, who wants alien costume ideas.
I just thought of a pun for that. Sherloptimus Prime. Sorry, I'm working like 30 seconds behind here.
Ben Prime.
This year, the theme for the London Sevens tournament is space. For anyone that doesn't know, the London Sevens is a rugby tournament that goes around the world, basically a massive fancy dress party where you drink and have fun. Anyway.
Sounds awesome.
His group is trying to decide who or what to dress up as, so it wants our suggestions. Obviously, practicality is important. Cost is important. I assume that you've got to play rugby in these costumes.
Yeah.
But he's talking about Monstars, i.e. Space Jam.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one.
Anything Star Wars, Guardians of the Galaxy, or Cylons. Now, Cylons, I can't see how you could play rugby in a Cylon.
Well, it's almost like that's American football gear,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Cantina Band?
What? Really?
Be laugh, wouldn't it? Imagine that, lads, looking like that.
Yeah.
Out and about, lads.
Banter.
Like Star Wars, I think, again, it would be amazing to turn up as a platoon of stormtroopers or something like that. Yeah. See, I'd go stormtroopers.
Oh, no. Stormtroopers would be cool. Or bounty hunters.
Would you?
Yeah, because I think it's good like if everyone has the distinctive costume rather than just all looking the same.
Dengar.
Bossk.
Are you?
Yeah, because then...
What about Boosh? Slayer. Sexy gear.
Could do. Yep. Or in the bikini, because I think that's a pretty good look for her.
Yeah.
Maybe as Alan Buxton's daughter says.
We could go as different like Leia. Like
different layers.
Like classic Leia in the white with the buns.
Yeah.
You and Slave, what would you go?
Wouldn't
as?
It be great?
I'd go as Endor, just comfy, innit? Yeah. That's like her on Sundays. It's like just, doing a bit of gardening.
What about her Bespin outfit?
What's the Bespin one?
She's kind of got little plaits in her hair.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like little
that's where she says, I love you.
Wouldn't it be great if they all agreed on Star Wars and then the day of the games they show up and they're all dressed as Leia? They're like, I said I was going as Leia. Why didn't you? And then they all got
you can all go as Leia.
Everyone can be Leia.
She's got at least seven costumes.
What about Star Trek? That's quite an easy one to do. Quite comfortable. Yeah. And then one of you can just be the red shirt. And
not the most exciting, though.
And then basically, if anyone gets pissed too early and has to go home, you give him the red shirt.
Yeah. It's a good chat.
So that's good.
Yeah, I guess that one's pretty good.
Easier, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then jumpers.
Ewoks.
Ewoks.
But you have your little feet on your knees. You run around on your knees.
You could do.
You're probably not going to play very well. That's the only problem.
It'd be crap getting served at the bar. Are they playing or are they just like going around watching this stuff, getting drunk?
Can you dress as a rugby team? Because then you're pretty much set.
Well, how does that fit?
No, they're not playing rugby. They're watching rugby.
How does it fit into space?
Oh, they're watching rugby. Oh, it has to be space.
We do not know much about
astronaut
rugby.
I know nothing about rugby.
Scrum. That's a word.
Rugby sevens. Is that because there's seven
teams or something?
Oh no, I know the rugby sevens.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Well that would be a good time to mention it.
Oh my god.
Yeah, they're not playing in the rugby sevens.
Why? Who does?
Teams. Real teams.
Okay.
England, Wales, Scotland, Northern Ireland.
So it's in terms of practicality.
Right, I think so. Yeah.
Just drinking.
No, actually,
he's got a good point. It's not just anything. Like if you're in a morph suit, that's a pain in the arse. Like. You need something where you can have a little drink. Like, you don't want a helmet on, do you?
Right.
That's just pain.
So Cylon's no good for that?
Cylon's no good.
No.
So Star Trek's the way to go, I think.
What about human centipede?
It's only logical.
Are they set on sci-fi?
And it's just filtered down from the first person to the last.
Yeah.
How many points do you want?
Five. I was doing the Spock hand there.
Yeah.
Which is actually based on a Jewish character.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, didn't know that.
Feedback.
Hello, this is a huge fan of yours from across the pond.
Who's it from?
This is Brock Smith.
There you go.
A cool name.
An American name. Brock, you get it.
I get you,
Rory Powers and Brock Smith.
Oh, we should hang out. Let's get a beer, Brock. I subscribe to over 30 podcasts, and I look forward to your podcast the most.
Yes.
Perhaps some of it is because it's fresh and new with all the British humor. I shouldn't be reading this. And such
you're
honesty.
British.
Honesty. Yeah.
You got a British passport?
No.
Oh, do you not?
I have American passport.
Get the hell out.
Yeah.
You only lived there for 4 years of your life.
Can you not get a dual?
I can get a Irish passport if I want. I can get an Irish passport, a dual nationality with my American.
But that's Northern Ireland. That's a British passport.
It's weird because my mum has a Southern Irish, Irish passport.
Right.
I don't understand it. I'm going to continue. Sorry about that, Brock.
Passport.
Rude. I think it simply has to do with you all being awesome.
Yes.
It took all the restraint I have not to include any British phrases in this email. Keep the fantastic podcast coming.
Yeah.
Well, so that was nice.
As our resident American, what are your favorite British phrases?
I like banter. I didn't like it, but it's growing on me.
Tilly brought that back.
Yeah, fun fact. Tilly brought that back.
Early 2000s.
I can't stop saying mental as well.
Yeah.
It's being it's a real problem.
You know
for
what? I started saying a lot because Gav says it a lot. He says, that's mad.
Yeah,
he does
mad,
say that a lot. Oh, that is mad.
Really?
I'm saying it quite a bit now.
Those phrases are good because you just need the one word. Like something happens, you just go mental.
Yeah.
Or mad. You don't need anything
mental
else.
Mental mad, that is so mental.
Mental mad. Mad banter.
Mad is what they said before mental. Do you know? This is what they said.
So has Gav bought Mad Brack? Mad back.
He's
mad
brought back. It back from Wales. Right.
Did you guys ever say class? Did that come over here?
Oh, yeah. Like that was class? When I was younger, that used to be a thing.
Yeah. Skill? I didn't know if that was just... That is, yeah. Skill. That is... Skill, mate.
Mate, that those skill. Tracky bottoms are mint.
Yeah.
Mint.
They're class.
Yeah, well, we...
It's all sick now, isn't it?
Sick, wicked used to be a thing.
Yeah.
I kind of want to start saying heavy, like they do in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, this is heavy.
What's happened to the Earth's gravitational pull in the future?
Exactly.
But... You know, podcast is a good podcast. I think we're right up there with Serial in terms of...
Totally.
Well, that's finished now, right?
Yeah, so...
So we are
number one.
If they can't sustain it, then get out.
Have they done 272 episodes?
No.
Nah.
But they do have that little jingle, and they got a sponsor before us.
I did jingles way back when.
We should do one of our podcasts... but in the Serial style. So be like talking about games, and I'll be like, it got an 8.5, did it not? Did it not?
I don't know what he's doing.
I'm doing the lawyer from Serial.
You have to did shout at me not? More.
I'll tell you what.
You have to shout at me more.
You can read through after Creeper's read the last
email. So many questions were racing through my mind. Did Destiny really deserve to get Game of the Year?
That's actually pretty good.
Find out next time on Serial. Dun, dun.
Sometimes I really don't think she's listening to me. Dear diary.
What's the last email?
We watched Serial. Watched it.
Well, that's why you didn't get the
do that on
impression.
Paternity leave.
Yeah, I'm
while
not
changing
have any
a baby.
Time. I'm not gonna have any time.
Right. Last bit of feedback.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
So this is from Lee Franks. He says, Duck Hunt.
Duck Hunt.
I am going to do a 24-hour gaming marathon on the 3rd of April, which all the money raised goes towards the special effect charity. We've mentioned
charity.
Them several times
yep.
on
awesome.
The show before. Are we going to do the run again this year?
I'm not.
Do you want to do 10K? Do you want to do 10K this year?
Yeah. Oh, cool. Sounds like fun.
We're always doing it then for RGN.
Are you going to dress up?
We could, yeah. We could
yeah.
Go
as Princess Leia.
Yeah.
We could go as the Cantina Band.
In my moo-moo. Yes.
I will be playing on Xbox One. His handle is CrazyBad2 and also streaming on Twitch where he is CrazyBad247. I also plan to do a video diary which will be uploaded to YouTube, CrazyBad2. Oh, he's promoting all his channels.
Good for him.
That sounds awesome.
Marketing.
And it's for a great, great cause. So, yeah, check it out.
There you go.
That's 3rd of April again.
There you go. All a good call. So that's feedback. Now, out this week, Rory, you're going to read out the games that are out this week in the style of Serial.
Oh, really? Okay, okay. As I looked down at the page, a couple things hit my mind. Would I be able to read this without making any mistakes? Let's find out on the next episode of Serial. On this episode of Serial, Battlefield Hardline received an 8.0. Final Fantasy Type-0, I'm losing it now.
Keep going.
Final Fantasy Type-0 is also out. Then we have Mario Party 10, which got a 6.5, and Resident Evil Revelations 2 Finale.
Episode 4,
which is the end of the whole thing. We also have a selection of movies coming out, which really made me wonder, was he telling me the truth? Next time, on Serial. This podcast is sponsored by MailChimp.
You use the MailChimp. Who's the MailChimp?
Yeah, I actually use MailChimp. Oh, really?
No, never heard of it, love.
I have no idea what any of you lot are going on about.
You should listen to the Serial podcast. It's good.
Okay, so movies. Right, here we go. I would do them in the style of Adnan, but I think that's bad taste. So, first up, Wildcard. Wildcard is new Jason Statham movie. We gave it 5.5, which on the IGN scoreometer is mediocre. Wildcard lacks the energy and fun of other Jason Statham movies, despite its flashy Vegas backdrop.
Was it mental?
It was mental, mate. And one of the pros is Statham being Statham in it. Natch.
Yeah.
Natch, Gav.
Skills.
Stanley Tucci's cameo. Apparently he's quite good in it. But not enough action and little substance. Really?
Which,
not enough substance? What are you expecting, mate?
For a Statham, for a Statham film to not have enough action.
Why
are you casting?
Yeah.
Right. Next up is Gunman. From the director of the first Taken movie, starring Sean Penn, kind of doing a Taken-esque role. We don't have a review on site. I've heard it's okay.
Right.
Next up is a movie Tilly reviewed like a year ago, Tilsner, called The Voices, Ryan Reynolds movie, kind of weird comedy. Chris gave it a 6.5, said it's okay. It says The Voices entertains in patches and Ryan Reynolds is fantastic, but the film ultimately fails to resonate. Superficial approach to a serious subject, he said. That's what we try to do to everything.
Last film?
Yeah.
And then last film is Insurgent, already out, came out on Thursday, I think. Whoa. The next in the Divergent
series.
Did
you guys see the first one?
No.
No?
I'd quite happily die without ever seeing it.
The Hunger Games is enough for me.
So well, the second one, 3.5. Bloody awful.
Don't go and see any film.
Bloody awful. It's a school... And logic is out in this senseless, badly told second installment in the young adult franchise Divergent.
That hurts.
So, don't see that.
No. I would say don't see any of them.
Stick with games. Get your heists on.
Yeah.
Do some heists. Plenty of heists.
Go rob some banks online.
Yeah. Yes.
Online. Blast them in the face.
That's it for this week's podcast. Thank you, Rory, for your impressions. I'm going to make you do that every single time you're on the podcast now.
Oh God!
So get practicing.
All right, that sounds good.
Thank you, Daniel.
You're very welcome.
And more importantly, thank you, listeners. We will be back same time next week. So until then, goodbye.
Next time on the Serial Podcast.
I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my two wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I'm hoping to open up the conversation about balancing careers and family. The one thing I constantly hear successful people say, without fail, is that they wish they'd spent more time with their kids. That's time no one can get back. So I decided to create Business Dad, to engage in the conversation about how we're spending our time now, providing a forum for successful dads to share their joys and challenges of being a working parent. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier. And while this podcast will talk about business and will definitely be featuring dads, I think everyone can learn something from these incredible conversations as we unpack the expectations we all have about careers, relationships, and ourselves. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.